Well, as you can see, I'm not Mio Leahy. You signed on hoping to see Mio. We're sorry that he is not with us. He took the second dose of a COVID vaccine yesterday and didn't react well with it today. And excuse me. He's lying low tonight. He didn't really, he felt very regretful about not being able to meet his commitment to be here. He didn't see any way that he could appear in a way that would be helpful. So, I'm filling in, and I would like to talk. What's happening? You know, what's the koan of the present moment, or what's coming up now? So, something did come up. Maybe it's not coming up right now, but it came up this morning in my zazen. It was a certain kind of feeling that came up. And maybe it's a kind of feeling that some of you are familiar with. And that feeling is a feeling of confidence in your zazen. Kind of feeling of confidence and also a feeling of determination. And so this feeling came up in me this morning. It was kind of a condition of my sitting this morning, a condition that is not always there, but it arrived. Pretty much right when I sat down this morning. Along the way of this condition manifesting itself, I thought of the phrase, si se puede. Some of you must know this phrase, which means literally, yes, it can be done. Or sometimes people say, we can do it. That's another more non-literal translation of that phrase. Si se puede. So sometimes this feeling arises, you know, in our zazen. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we think there's a practice here and I can do it. And I'm going to do it and I'm doing it. And this is not like really coming from ego, but it's coming from this coming up from zazen. It's coming through from zazen. This kind of feeling that, yes, I can. And again, it's not always there. We don't always have that kind of confidence, or commitment to our practice. Myself, sometimes I sit down and I don't feel a great commitment to my practice. I'm always practicing. You know, I have a practice of practicing. So regardless of the condition, I'm going to sit down in the morning and see what the condition is of this moment. And that's the condition that manifested this morning. And of course, it's kind of a happy condition. You know, it's a condition that we don't run away from that condition, or we're actually pretty comfortable with that condition when we're doing something, almost anything, and We want to be doing it, and we feel committed to doing it, and we don't feel conflict about doing it. We don't feel like some part of us would like to do it, but this other part would not, which sometimes happens as well. There's another condition where sometimes we're doing something, but we really don't want to be doing that thing. But sometimes it comes together, and this sort of great intention, that's not, again, our ego driving it. It's just coming up. It integrates us. It unites us. It has us going all in one direction. There was some, I always think of this experiment. It seems like we did it in elementary school. You do something with a magnet, and if you do this thing with the magnet, all the little iron filings line up in the right direction. And I always think of that experiment when my Zazen is like that, or when I hear about somebody's Zazen who's like that, or if I read some Zen story of some very integrated and confident, determined practitioner. I think of those iron filings from elementary school lining up, because it's kind of a natural law that they do. So I have to be careful how I talk about this, because just a few weeks ago, I told a story that Blanche Hartman used to like to tell about herself, of going to talk to Suzuki Roshi and telling him that after some time of practice, I don't know how long, but she was not a beginner at that point. She knew Suzuki Roshi, and she went to Suzuki Roshi and she says, you know, so she went to him and she said, kind of said, I've got it. I know what I'm doing on the cushion. I know how to sit Zazen. And of course, she got a stern reaction from Suzuki Roshi, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. And he said something like, don't ever say you know how to sit Zazen. Zazen. Zazen sits Zazen. So, you know, we shouldn't mistake, I think the teaching there is, we shouldn't mistake some condition, any particular condition that is arising at any particular time in our sitting practice, and say, now I've got it. Now it's mine. I can keep it forever. And I can always replicate this state. I can always go back to it. Because the sad truth is, I don't know if you can do that. I haven't found that's necessarily the case. I think it's better to think about our practice as manifesting various conditions. And sometimes those conditions are happy, and sometimes they're more conflicted or less integrated. And if there is a teaching or a secret here, it's you know, just keep sitting regardless of conditions. Don't be fooled by the conditions that arise in your Zazen. You know, if there's a pleasurable condition, wonderful. If there's a happy condition, wonderful. Enjoy it, no problem. But if and you know, if there is a condition that's you know, we don't really want to be sitting. We're sitting, but you know, we're waiting for the period to end and thinking about our breakfast and so forth. Then, you know, that's just the way that period is. And our, you know, practice is taken out of the realm of I want to, or I like it, or I don't like it. If you sit every day, practice is taken out of that realm. That's a good way to take it out of the realm of preference. Just sit every day. And whatever comes up is your practice that day. Happy, sad, joyful, depressed, whatever. Just let Zazen sit Zazen. Sometimes it won't seem like Zazen is even there, and that's okay. That's the life of a person that practices. So I was, we're reading in the study group on Thursday mornings for quite a while now, some months it seems. We've been reading a commentary on the Mountains and Waters Sutra by Shohaku Okamura. And it was really his inspiration to talk about this, to use this word, a condition, the conditions arising, or a condition arising in Zazen. He brings this point out. And there's a section in where he is talking about a point in the text. This, it's called the sutra, but it's really a text. You know, it's not a sutra. It's not a like original sutra from the Pali. It's something that Dogen wrote and named a sutra, but it's not a thus I have heard sutra. From the old country. It's not from India. This sutra, this text was written in Japan and called a sutra. Which is a bold claim for Dogen to make, but he nevertheless makes it. And in this particular section of the text, Dogen is criticizing people, certain practitioners who think that the point of Zazen practice is to end all thoughts, to end thinking, to stop and not think, not have any thinking arise. So I kind of wanted to read this part because it was something I told the study group I felt very... I was very happy to read this part and kind of liking it a lot. And so I wanted to share it with you. So it's a couple of paragraphs, not too long. He says, again, this is commenting on this, this statement in the text about that Dogen's criticizing these people that think that, that Zazen is about ending thinking. Some people think that when we eliminate all thought and experience enlightenment, we are liberated, but we don't have to do anything else and can be happy for the rest of our lives. I think that's a great joke. Some people think that when we eliminate all thought and experience enlightenment, we are liberated. We don't have to do anything else and could be happy for the rest of our lives. I think this is a misunderstanding or even a superstition. Dogen tried to caution his students that the point is to let go of thoughts and just be as you are. No thinking is not enlightenment. That is not our goal. So he's agreeing with Dogen's, you know, point of view here. I have been practicing, this now it's Shohaku, I have been practicing for more than 40 years, so I have experienced many conditions during Zazen. Sometimes I have had the experience of no thought, of simply being there. It was very pleasant. But from the beginning of my practice, I was taught that any condition is merely the scenery of Zazen. So I don't consider it a special or a good part of Zazen. Sometimes my mind is very busy and distracted, but still, that is part of my Zazen. When my mind is busy, I try to sit upright and breathe deeply and smoothly and keep my eyes open. When I find that I am interacting with thoughts, I try to let go. If we think that this condition is favorable and that one is unfavorable, then we create samsara, or suffering, in our Zazen. I want to get, and then he has this quote. It's not his, he's just kind of putting it in quotes for the sake of rhetoric. I want to get there. I want to experience this more often or longer. So that would be like me saying, you know, tomorrow morning, getting up and saying, oh, I want to have the same feeling I had yesterday morning. Oh, I hope for that. I really hope for it. I'm going for it. This is, I want to get there. I want to experience this more often and longer. When we are successful, we are happy, and otherwise we are sad. Any condition of our mind is the scenery of our Zazen, or the scenery of our life, so we don't cling to any condition. I learned from my teacher, his teacher was Uchiyama Roshi, I learned from my teacher that any condition, whether mental or physical, is just a condition. In my practice, the most important thing is to keep the upright posture, breathe deeply from my abdomen, keep my eyes open, let go of whatever comes from my consciousness. That's all I do. I try to keep this posture under any condition. To create certain conditions of our mind is not the purpose of our sitting. Then he says, Sawaki Roshi. Sawaki Roshi was Uchiyama's teacher. So it's his Dharma grandfather. It's Shohaku Okamura's Dharma grandfather is Sawaki Roshi. Sawaki Roshi quoted a dialogue between Zen master Long Yu Judun. Let's just say the Zen master, dialogue between the Zen master and a monk. The monk asked, how did the ancient master finally cease doing things and completely settle down? The master replied, it was like a thief slipping into a vacant house. So anyway, there's more good stuff here, but I think I'll leave it off there. And we could talk about that little dialogue though, because that's kind of a fun one. The monk asked, what did the ancient master find? Oh no, how did the ancient master finally cease doing things and completely settle down? I guess he's talking about Lung Ya as the ancient master. So he's asking his teacher, essentially, or his master at the moment, Lung Ya. And Lung Ya says, it was like a thief slipping into a vacant house. So I thought about this. You haven't had the luxury of thinking about this little statement for a while, but I have a luxury of thinking about it for a while. And I was playing with various ideas of who's the thief? And if we were sitting in a hall together, I might, you know, ask you, who's the thief? It would be fun and we'd have some exchange, but it's, I don't know, it's too hard to do on here. So I'll tell you what I think the thief is, and then we can have some dialogue. So I think the thief is a discriminating consciousness. Consciousness that is always seeing the separation of subject and object, or me and the whole rest of the world, whole rest of the environment. And this thief, this discriminating consciousness, is kind of in the business of stealing. And because that kind of consciousness is frequently trying to rob of us of our pureness, our pure heart, our pure intention, our goodness, you know, or if not rob us, distract us, or, you know, take us off in many unfruitful directions. So that when that discriminating consciousness quiets down, which is kind of like slipping into the vacant house. So when that kind of consciousness does zazen, let's say, or engages with non-discrimination, with non-discriminating awareness, when discriminating awareness engages with non-discriminating awareness, and there's a healthy dialogue, you know, discriminating awareness isn't, you know, or non-discriminating awareness isn't denigrating discriminating awareness, and discriminating awareness isn't denigrating non-discriminating awareness. There's just this healthy dialogue. There's they reach some accommodation. They reach some balance point. And then there can be settling down. What does he say he does? He settles down. Oh, he ceases doing things and completely settles down. So, yeah, ceases doing things. It's really good for us to cease doing things sometimes, you know. This is really, really helpful for human beings to do. To cease all affairs, that's what Dogen says in Fukan Zazengi. Cease all affairs, cease all the movements of the conscious mind, the gauging of all thoughts and views. Just cease doing things for a while. Or make effort. But not with the goal of like, no thoughts. That was the original point here in the reading. Not with that goal, not with any goal, but engage in that process of discriminating consciousness, slipping in to a vacant house where there's, you know, there are no objects in the vacant house, you know. There's nothing to really engage with. So the thief can rest, you know, the thief can take refuge. It doesn't have to be a thief in the vacant house. It doesn't have to do that stuff. He can take a break from those that activity of robbing robbing our good spirit. And so, you know, and then that, and if we engage in that activity, that kind of activity, slipping into the vacant house every so often, like every day, then we can cope with houses that have lots of stuff in them and lots to do, lots to take care of, you know. We have houses, people have, I think you're all fortunate enough to have houses with lots of things in them to take care of. And this is a fortunate thing, of course. But it's good to forget all that stuff from time to time, like every day. Just forget all of it. And this refreshes our life and allows us to be helpful in the world. So that is my impromptu Dharma talk for tonight. Thank you very much. Forgot to turn my light on. It's supposed to brighten me up. Hi, Kenny.
Yeah, you probably said this, but I was thinking the thief is going to come in there with ideas of gaining something, and the house is completely empty. So he just kind of, there's nothing he can do to, there's nothing for him to gain. So he stays in there and he eventually reaches, you know, equilibrium or calm. Because a lot of times when I do Zazen, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get something out of this, or I'm going to have a good feeling. And, but, you know, it's not under my control. So I'm sort of like the thief in the vacant house. And eventually I have just settled down and I'm just going to sit and, you know, not expect any treasures or things like that. They may show up, but I'm not going to expect. That was a very good talk for being impromptu. So I want to say that.
Yes.
That's all.
Thank you, Kenny. Barry, and then Dell.
Okay. Sasaki Sawaki? What was his name again?
Oh, Sawaki, yeah.
Sawaki. He has another quote regarding the thief I really like. Made me think about it. It's something like, enlightenment is like a thief breaking into a house only to realize it was his house that he accidentally broke into.
Hmm.
Like that. I always like that analogy.
Yeah.
Nice talk, by the way.
That was, you're welcome.
Very good for impromptu.
Another expression like that is from the Book of Serenity is the fire god comes seeking fire.
Ooh, nice.
Fire god is of the nature of fire, but still comes seeking fire. Dell.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you and just tell you how meaningful it was for me, because the tradition I came from was very specific about not thinking. In fact, at one point there was a Zoom meeting and one of the Rinpoches and wherever said, after the third thought, stop meditating. You're creating bad habits. And, you know, that was just what we struggled to do. And it was just very difficult, you know, and I just really appreciate the different take that Zen and you are talking about tonight, and Dogen. It just, I don't know, it makes more sense. It's kind of like when Dogen says, I think it was Dogen who said, if you think you're going to get somewhere, you'll never get there. I mean, it's a paradox to think you're here and you're going to get there. Of course, you'll never do that. So anyway, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, you know, that Zen isn't free as Dogen or as, well, Dogen and Shohaku Okamura are pointing out. I mean, there is teaching in Zen about, you know, thinking, what do you do sitting there? I mean, the famous one is Yakusan, you know, the monk asks Yakusan, what do you do sitting there in upright stability? And Yakusan says, I think of not thinking. And the monk says, how do you think of not thinking? And he says, Yakusan says, non-thinking. So it's not that, in my mind, it's not that thinking is promoted over non-thinking. And it may be that not thinking is promoted over thinking. But what enables us, what is it that enables us not to think? And it's not thinking. It's not thinking that it's whatever it is that enables us not to think. It has nothing to do with thinking. So this is something we can ponder for. We can ponder and we can sit with for a long time. There's not necessarily a final answer or, you know, understanding. Larry.
Thank you, Jim. I enjoyed listening to your talk. You know, the thief wants to, what do they call it? Snatch it, grab and run, you know, like when you grab a purse, you snatch it, you grab it. And so I think of grasping. The thief wants to grasp, only to realize in the vacant house that there's nothing to grasp. And what you are trying to grasp is nothing more than an illusion, a fleeting illusion. But I think that's the same. I think it's similar to what the grasping mind is the discriminating mind. So we may be saying the same thing from just using different words. And I, as to the earlier part of your talk, sitting with conditions and not being swayed by your particular condition of the moment. I've had that feeling where you have the magnets and the iron all lines up, but I've also had the feeling where I have the two magnets and the iron particles are all scattered. Mm-hmm. And I think there's, you know, that's the practice becomes more and more interesting when you try and keep the same level of trust in your sitting when everything scatters as when it lines up. So thank you again. You never tire of listening to readings of Dogen and Okamura. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I think Raphael has his hand up, Jim.
Okay, Raphael.
Yes. Jim, thank you for the talk. A suitable replacement for Mio. So what was the preceding question that brought the thief into an empty space? How?
Oh, the preceding question is, how did the ancient master finally cease doing things and completely settle down?
Yes.
That's the monk's question.
Yeah, that's the key there. And how do I capture Zazen? How do I capture and hold Zazen still in my arms or in my bosom? And so the how is, the response to the how is, it's like a thief breaking into a dwelling and finding that it's all empty. Well, that's another way of saying that the now moments, as in the sitting of Zazen, are always empty. That's when one is able to say that I have seen Zazen, I have touched it, and I hold it. It's saying that there is nothing there. The now moments are always going to be empty. In Zazen, when one actually sees it and holds it, it's actually seeing nothing because it's empty. And so the thief is actually symbolic of the now moments. There's nothing there. If you're trying to achieve something, if you're reaching for something in Zazen, you're going to end up with a empty hand trying to grasp at emptiness. You can't hold emptiness. You can't touch it. You can't see it. And so the thief is very crafty, and that's what the now moments are, very crafty. We think we're going to see something. I think that I'm going to walk away with something of value in my hand when I sit. Then after the sit, I get up and I look in my hands and there's nothing there.
Yeah, well, another way. Thank you. You know, another way to think of too, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you said. And I'll say that as I contemplated that little exchange, I thought, well, where does the thief, what's, you know, it says he slips into the vacant house. So I played with the idea that the vacant house is refuge. It's a refuge for discriminating consciousness. It's a place to let go of discriminating consciousness. It's it's refuge, you know, it's going for refuge in the practice and in the three treasures that really lets people, you know, ultimately, you know, after many years, cease doing things and completely settle down. That's another way of looking at it. Meg?
Yeah, Jim, I just wanted to thank you so much. I feel like some of the questions I asked you a couple weeks ago when I called, that this is like the answer to that expanded. And you know, I now kind of take my question and go, oh, really? Because I saw this huge difference between my morning sit and my evening sit. And I was weighing them as one better than the other. This talk just, wow. So I wanted to thank you for taking that whole answer to another level today, tonight. Thank you very much. For an impromptu talk, it was certainly full.
Well, you know, I also played the thief, you know. I thieved from Shohaku, so you can't go wrong. You know, someplace break into some of his commentaries and come away with riches. That's for certain.
Thank you so much,
Peter.
I may not have understood this talk, but when I hear about a thief, in the as you spoke of it, I'm certainly thinking of the appeal of a lock and key when we have something that fits so perfectly. I don't know if any of you ever played Tetris, but I loved playing Tetris 32 years ago, and it just the parts would fall and the geometric shapes would fit perfectly, and then a line would disappear. And it's a bit like when you're seeking for a diagnosis of a patient who's got some issues, and then something shows up that fits perfectly the description of all the symptoms. The thief will say, that's the diagnosis. And then what I'm deprived of is the open mind that keeps searching for subsequent diagnoses just in case that one that fit perfectly is incorrect. Does that seem to resonate with you at all? I'm just talking about stopping listening, stopping searching once you find something that fits so perfectly. Is that perhaps relevant here?
Well, your statement reminds me of Zuki Roshi saying, you know, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few, right?
So, yeah.
And sometimes experts have this problem because the expertise becomes a telescope, and then it excludes other possibilities that, and you know, oftentimes we see in science and so forth, we sometimes see, you know, the the lab assistant to the great, you know, researcher comes up with some approach that the great researcher didn't consider because it didn't fit in his or her, you know, pre-existing knowledge. So we see this, you know. And so, yes, your comment is on the mark, I think. Okay, well, I don't see any more hands raised. It must be about of our witching hour here. Wonderful to see everybody.